Welcome to Northwest Nazarene University Palcon, a workshop about blended families. Two things I want to say. First of all, thank you for caring about blended families. Everybody has their own reason why that matters to them, but thank you for caring. It's a part of the community. It's a part of the culture that we're in that we haven't embraced or responded to as soon as we needed to. Even 15 years ago, the church was not awake to that part of the community, and the church is waking up now. And you're proof of that being here, and just thank you for caring about blended families. Thank you for being here. As we get started, I'll let you know that we're recording this session, so if you say anything, be sure it's something you'd like to have recorded in perpetuity on the Nazarene website, just so you know that. We are David and Lisa Frisbee, and blended families are kind of what we do. I would invite you to join Nazarene Marriage Partnership on the LinkedIn network. Who's on LinkedIn? Anybody on LinkedIn? If you go to LinkedIn and look for the Nazarene Marriage Partnership, just click on it and join it. We have discussions on there all the time. I would caution you, we have about 500 members. Most of them are there to be in Nazarene Marriage Fellowship, but because it's global, we get sometimes gentlemen from other countries who see Marriage Partnership and somehow think that we offer services that we don't really provide. So just be aware. Once you do, we try to monitor that, but be aware if you do join, there are some gentlemen that joined looking for a partner. Just be conscious of that. But we would encourage you to become a part of the conversation over there. Yes, indeed. We did not set out to work with blended families. We were working with married couples and speaking at marriage retreats and ministers and mates retreats. And this is long ago, 30 years ago. God would keep bringing us blended families, remarried couples, just repeatedly, just over and over and over again. We'd go out to do a marriage retreat, and it would turn out that the audience was blended. So finally we said, Lord, are you trying to tell us something? Does this mean something? And we felt like it did, and he did. So we then began to study the blended family. And how we keep it fresh is, one of the ways, there's a large church in California. When we started with them, they were about 2,500. They're now about 11,000. And four times a year, they do a preparing to marry class. And so we're involved in the preparing to marry class, but many of the people preparing to marry are divorced adults, 30 to 60. So they do a breakout session on remarriage that we do four times a year. So if I thought I knew something 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 20 years ago, that's great for me, but we're freshly getting new input all the time. Quick question, I realize you're being recorded. As we teach this class and others and work with couples preparing to remarry, most of the couples that come to that class are cohabiting already. Now, is that a California thing, or is that, okay, that's a Washington thing? Is that a little more broad? These are people attending evangelical churches, Bible preaching churches, bringing their teenage kids to church or their younger children to church, and while they think about a remarriage, while they consider that, while they go to the class, they are in fact cohabiting. So that's not just California. That's the culture we're in. All right. We're exposed to that on a regular basis. We've done a lot of workshops and retreats for blended families and step families. Really enjoy it. It's kind of our favorite slice of life. We also get to work with ministers and mates, and we love that slice of life also. If you see the gentleman in the photo there, he is in full Scottish regalia. We just did this particular wedding. He's wearing a kilt. He's got a dagger strapped to his leg because apparently that's part of the deal. As soon as I pronounce them man and wife, you can't see, but we're in an auditorium, much like this one, a large, older auditorium. As soon as I pronounce them man and wife, he scoops her up and runs. I don't mean walk. Runs down about 8 stairs, narrow stairs, just runs out of the building with her. That was prearranged. She knew she was going to be scooped. But he's wearing a dress, picking up his bride, and running downstairs full tilt. He's my hero. He's an amazing gentleman, brave enough to wear a kilt in public and then to scoop her up and run. We all held our breath. We all thought, oh my goodness, what's going to happen there? I also do some teaching at a couple of Nazarene universities and one Wesleyan as an adjunct professor. Adjunct is a Latin word meaning all the work, none of the benefits. But it's a lot of fun and it keeps me learning. And a lot of the times I'm teaching counselors and training counselors. But a lot of the times people that are training to be counselors are themselves in a remarriage or considering a remarriage or they're divorced adult thinking, maybe someday I'll get married. So we just have constant exposure to students and learners. That's a little bit silly, but a newspaper in the 1990s decided that we were America's remarriage experts. I promise you, Lisa did not say that. I don't even think that way. But it got printed in the newspaper. So we get a call about 2 years later from Group Publishing wanting us to do a book about remarriage. And we're like, okay. We had a nice conversation. We didn't know anybody there. Great conversation. We agreed to do the book. Once that was done, I said, now, pardon me, out of curiosity, you know, we're glad you called, but why did you call us? And they said in Colorado at Group Publishing, well, everybody knows you're America's remarriage experts. So isn't this a goosebumpy time for all of you to be in the same room as America's remarriage experts? Oh my goodness, isn't it? Where these things come from is crazy. This means that's what we've studied a lot. The experts are the people that are living it out, making it work. There's the experts. If you want an expert, go find somebody who's in a second marriage or a third marriage. We're working with one right now. It is a fourth marriage for him and a first for her. How do you think that's going? It's going just like you think. It's a little rocky. It's got some rough patches in it. We asked them a question that I often ask remarried couples. Tell me about your pre-remarriage counseling. And I get a blank stare, and their eyes glaze over, and they go, we didn't have any. So you're going into the toughest kind of marriage there is, and you didn't get pre-remarriage counseling? It's like, oh my goodness. Let's talk about family life and how it's changing. You know it is. We start with 1960 because that's kind of a watershed time for the United States, at least. In the 1960s, if you're a historian or a cultural anthropologist, in the 1960s, you have the sexual revolution. You have Vatican II in the Catholic Church. As the Catholic Church takes what could be interpreted as a more liberal stand on some issues. So the 1960s culture changes a lot in North America, certainly in the United States. And that's why a lot of times for family studies, people like to isolate 1960 and look at it. Let's just look at, not supposed to show you the answer yet. There we go. Let's look at 1960. What percentage of children in the USA lived with two heterosexual parents who were both in their first original marriage? That's kind of the Leave It to Beaver family, if you will, circa 1950s, but we're isolating 1960. You have a mom and a dad. The dad is male. The mom is female. This is a first marriage for both of them. As a percentage, what percentage? You may have seen it flash by. 73%. So 3 out of 4 kids in the United States were in a family that looked just like Leave It to Beaver, with a mom and a dad, first marriage for both. They were growing up like that in 1960. If we go 20 years forward, do we expect to see more in that kind of situation or less? So the number's going to go down. I wonder how far the number's going to go down. It was at 73%. 20 years forward, we're at 61. So it's fallen from 73 to 61% by 1980. And we've got to bring it up to today. I'll just point out for these slides, today for us means 2014 because that's the last full year we have good data for. 2015 has happened as we're recording this. It's done. The sociologists haven't analyzed it well enough yet. Obviously, we're living 2016 as we take this. We're living in 2016. 2014 is the last full year we have good data for. So when that says today, just know what we mean is 2014. Today, what percentage of children in the USA live with two heterosexual parents in their first original marriage? You're all in the right area. 46%. All of you are right on it. So not only do you care about blended families, but you're pretty up on what's happening. It's like, that's the extent to which the family's changed just since 1960. I'll go out on a limb and admit to you, I was alive in 1960. I was very young, for the record, but I was alive. So just in my lifetime, families are changing significantly. In 1960, what percentage of our children in the USA were born outside of marriage? They used to say out of wedlock. That was their quaint way to say that. What percentage? As a percentage, what percentage of kids were born out of wedlock? That was in 1973, and that'll play into the next slide. Roe v. Wade was 1973. Good point. 1960, it was 5%. So another way to look at that would be 19 out of every 20 kids born were born into a marriage. 19 out of 20 were born into a marriage. 1 out of 20, or 5%, were born outside of marriage. 1980, what happens? More outside, less outside? More being born to this, more to that. Where are we going? We are right at 17%. And understand that the difference between 1960 and 1980 is, in 1980, I don't have to let this baby be born. So if I'm single and I don't want to have this baby, I don't have to have this baby. I can have this baby taken care of for the numbers more than triple in 20 years, even though not all babies are being born. Millions of babies have been killed by the time of that statistic, so it's more than tripled by then. Up till today, about what percentage are born outside of marriage today, i.e. 2014? Yes. Who said that? You're close. You're close. It's an enormously high number. So about half of the kids being born are being born outside of a marriage relationship. It's a major, major change. And I sometimes think the church hasn't fully comprehended. We all know that culture is changing. Everybody gets that. We haven't fully comprehended what this looks like family by family, child by child, house by house. All right, what percentage of the children in the USA were living with an unmarried parent in 1960? I think of, what was the show, Family Affair? I'll date myself. Family Affair. You have Buffy and Jody, these cute little kids living with their Uncle Bill. I forget why, but Uncle Bill was raising Buffy and Jody. He had Missy. Who was Missy? A housekeeper? A niece? Sissy. Yes, Sissy. Thank you. Yes. Anyway, you're growing up, and you're not growing up with a married parent. What percentage? It's about 9% in 1960. So about 1 out of 10 kids is living with an unmarried parent. Maybe always single, maybe divorced. Just all we know is they are not married while that child is growing up. 1980? Yes, yes, absolutely, yes. By 1980, that percentage has gone from 9% to 19%. So it has doubled plus. It's more than double just in that 20-year slice. And then we come all the way up to today. How many kids living with an unmarried parent? As a percentage? That's very, who said that? That's very, very close. That's awesome. 34. Awesome. Do we have a prize for the winners? How about a nice, like a peach shake from Chick-fil-A or something? Doesn't that sound good? We should have a great peach milkshake. 34%, so about 1 out of every 3 children in the United States has a parent who's living with a parent who is not a married person. They're outside of a marriage in terms of who their parent is. All right, directly on blended family, in 1960, how many adults, this is not a percentage, this is a number, how many adults living in the USA are in a second or third or fifth or eighth marriage as of 1960? How many adults? Maybe 100,000, maybe 200,000, maybe. Look at that. Look at that. That's USA only. In the USA, there were 14 million people who were in a second or higher marriage in 1960. So we had actually heard of divorce by that time, and we were actually getting married. Now, granted, as you mentioned, if your spouse dies and you remarry, guess what? You're living in a second marriage. So that's not all divorce. But you're in a second or a higher marriage. By 1980, how many adults? More or less? 22 million by 1980 in a second or higher marriage. And by today, from 22 million, this whole row here is just right on. It's awesome. It's awesome. Did you sneak in here and play through the PowerPoints before this? That whole entire row. We should have peach milkshakes for that whole entire row. That's 42 million adults in the USA as of 2014 are in a second or higher marriage. So, if your church was going to reach or work with people that were remarried or in a blended family, do you think there's anybody out there? Well, 42 million are out there as of 2014, and the number grows every year. What percentage of adults in the USA had gotten married at least once during their lifetime by 1960? In other words, marriage was something that they had experienced. They had gotten married. Maybe weren't married anymore, but they had been through a wedding ceremony at least once and gotten married. 85%. So most adults got married. That's what adults did. Adults got married. There were single adults, of course, always. Nothing wrong with being single. But 85% of adults in 1960 had been married at least once. By 1980, where's that going? From 85%? Not up, it's going down. It's going down. Same row. Awesome. It's the winning row. 78% by 1980. So it's down by about 7%. That's a large block of people who have not ever been married at least once during their lifetime. By today, what do you think it is? It's higher than you might think. But as you know, more people are choosing to not bother with marriage and the ceremony and the license and all of that. So when you look at the entire United States, about 30% of adults haven't ever been married. About 70% had. That doesn't mean they still are married, by the way. You can see that, right? We have experienced one. We may not be in it today, but we have been through one. We've been married at least once. And here's the last one that we'll look at. 1960, what percentage of young adults, this is 18 to 34, I think I'm a young adult still, but I'd be slightly outside of that range. What percentage of young adults were living with their parents instead of out on their own? We're looking for a percentage, not a number. So percentage of young adults living with their parents instead of on their own. Do you do like football games or baseball games or basketball games? Because you could help us a lot, I think. I think we could raise some revenue here just letting you forecast how it's going to work out. That's outstanding. Awesome. 20% of young adults were living with their parents, not out on their own. By 1980, could be less, could be more. Which way is it going? It's going higher? It is higher. It's at 24%. So in that 20-year period, there's an increase. 24% are now. And now we go to today. It's higher. Today it is. I'm waiting for the row that knows. Right on it. That whole row was in the 30s, right on it, 32%. So about one out of every three young adults, and they count, you have 34, they're still counting as a young adult, 18 to 34. One out of three 18 to 34 year olds. Do you know who they are demographically, by the way? I hate to say this, I hate to be gender specific. They're men. They're males. They are young males going out to look for work. I'm going to give them credit for being industrious, hardworking folk, because we know they are. Every last one of them, industrious and hardworking, that strong work ethic. They're going out there and looking for work. They're not finding it. It occurs to them, I know who will do my laundry. I know who will cook my food. I know who won't charge me for rent. And they're moving back home. This has been skyrocketing since 2008. That's kind of a marker if you're tracking this. About 2008, whoosh, this just shot up. All right, from there, let's talk about blended families and why they break up. Why remarriages fail, because they're breaking up all the time. Why do they do that? Why does that happen? And you can be thinking about how your church can respond to that. We'll call them stress fractures in blended families. The most common stress fractures in a blended family. By far, the number one, you might think it was money. Money makes the list. You might think it was something else. By far, the number one is the parenting gap. We just cannot agree on how to discipline the kids. Yes. Yes, it is. Absolutely. It's true in every marriage.
And the biggest problem is it's my kids versus your kids.
Absolutely.
Versus when they're together, at least our kids.
Yes.
Well, sometimes.
If you look at the statistics and look at the odds, if you're trying to get remarried, if you don't have any kids at all, she doesn't, he doesn't, nobody has kids, your odds of surviving a remarriage go way up. Or if the kids are grown and out of the house and not moving back home, your odds go way, way up. If you both have school-age kids, I don't want to say you're going to fail. I'm just going to say the numbers are dismal. The numbers are horrible. So you get to averages from how things work out, but the numbers are dismal if you both have school-age kids. If you both have an adolescent female, yeah, I never say never, but I would say really think that through before you do a remarriage with an adolescent female on both sides. It's just difficult. That's the number one issue. Right now in California, the average duration of a remarriage is about 19 months, by the way. And that's the reason they split. We just can't agree on who's going to do it, how they're going to do it, the style we're going to do it. They made a cute movie out of that. What's the name of the movie with Dennis Quaid? Yours, Mine, and Ours. It's a cute movie. I don't think there's much that's objectionable in there. I haven't seen it lately, but they kind of make it funny. They laugh about the fact that these two people discipline very, very differently. In real life, they're not always laughing. It's a tough, tough issue. Number two is the scheduling battles, just the constant disputes and fight with co-custodial parents. So that also revolves around the children in the home. Obviously, you don't have that problem if you're not custodial of a child. You don't have that whole issue to fight. But if you do, huge, constant. What do I do at Christmas? What do I do at Thanksgiving? Who gets her for birthday? No, you had her birthday last time. It's my turn. It's a mess. Number three, this is probably the more colorful. It's not the top cause, but it's the most colorful cause, the crazy X-Files dealing with someone's immature or difficult ex. Have you ever heard of an ex being difficult or immature by any chance? This is not gender specific at all. This is not at all by gender. There are some radically immature men out there, as well as radically immature women out there, who can't let go or are jealous or whatever it may be, have attachment issues. The crazy ex drives apart more remarriages daily. It's just a huge, huge issue. Behavioral issues, again, in the kids, attachment disorders. This is not necessarily a seminar on attachment disorders, but the children are in a newly formed household. They may have had to give up their bedroom. They may have had to change school districts or change houses. They may be bouncing back and forth between houses. All sorts of attachment disorders in children, especially younger children, but adolescents also. If you haven't studied or looked at attachment disorders, I might point you in that way just to read more about that. A fascinating issue, and it applies to blended families more than any other category. And number five, we get to it finally, the money pit, financial pressures, different priorities. We have a good friend who's been to some of our seminars in a part of the country I won't identify, but she's out there somewhere. She is herself a divorced and remarried person. She is also a financial planner and a very good one. She says to every woman she talks to, get a full credit and full background check on your prospective partner before you get married. And she is dead serious. Now, how romantic is that? Honey, I love you so much. Is it okay if I get a full credit check and a full background check? She says that is a whole lot better than getting married. And he's verbally said, and I'm sorry to pick on men, but he's verbally said, okay, I have a little bit of money stress, but everything's fine. You marry him, you find out he's got thousands of dollars worth of debt and custody issues, and it's confusing. She says to women, get a credit check, get a background check. That's so unromantic, but she means every word of it, and she may not be wrong. She may have something to say there. So what can your church do with blended families that are stressed out and fracturing all the time? This is an interactive part, so we'll let that row that knows all certainly speak to this. This is interactive. One thing you can do is address the parenting gap. So your church could intentionally, on purpose, help people get on the same page in their parenting and child raising. How many of you have had a parenting class in your church in the last year? And see, that benefits everybody. That benefits a single parent. That benefits a married parent. Is parenting ever easy under any circumstances? Is there an easy, every once in a while you have that compliant child, God bless you, stop there. Yeah, just don't give birth after that. If you get a compliant child. So if your church was offering classes about parenting, that would help blended families. You wouldn't even have to label it blended families. You could if you wanted, because they need that and they care about that. You wouldn't have to label it blended. Just classes that help people get on the same page. If you can get a husband and a wife in agreement on how discipline is going to work, that serves the community, that serves the family, that helps everyone. Small groups of blended families. We have seen so much power here. We're still on the address the parenting gap side. Somehow to feel like I'm not alone in this. There are other people going through what I'm going through. We just had a pastor from Topeka, Kansas, who wanted a lot of resources and took home a lot of resources because everyone on his church board is in a blended family, his entire church board, and most of the adults in his church are blended families. He gets it automatically. They've got small groups of blended families. Now, out of curiosity, Do you have more than a blended family in your church? If you tried this, are there two blended, three blended, eight blended? Excellent. So heads are nodding. So you could populate small groups. More than one small group? At least one small group? Perhaps multiple groups? Depends on your size of church. Small groups of blended families that get together and pray for each other, support each other. It's the same in a marriage. If you're working with young married couples, if you can get them with other young married couples to pray together, to stay together, that's a powerful, powerful thing. Parenting gap, workshops and seminars. We just finished a workshop and seminar for a district where the district brought people in to just train people in these kinds of things. A lot of times a local church doesn't have the budget to do that. I get it. Churches are starved for cash and finances are low, but maybe the zone could come together and do something, or the district, or your ministerium in your community could get together. There are some very, very active ministeriums that do that. Yes?
Back on the last one, the small groups.
Yes. That's a good question. You will know that case by case. That's a very good question. Would you want to seed that group with a really tight married couple that wasn't a blended family just to kind of model healthy habits or something? You might. I've seen it both ways. There's virtue in knowing we're all facing the same struggle. There's some benefit to that. But you're right. If we're all immature and without a clue facing the same struggle. Yeah. Good point. Excellent. Books and resources. Some of the books that we've done with Nazarene Publishing House, which by the way still exists and is still doing excellent work. If you've heard that NPH is dead, you did not hear correctly. They've been through some challenges and some difficult seasons, and they've come out the other side. They're very much alive. They're amazing people. They're so committed to the gospel and getting the word out, and they're also committed to helping families. Many of the books that we've done for NPH have free guides on Discipleship Place, which is an SDMI website, which means if you wanted to lead somebody through that, you wouldn't have to pay for anything, you wouldn't have to buy anything. It's just free. You can just download what you need. I love free. Thank you, NPH. Thank you, SDMI. Free is good. Scheduling battles. This is not possible for every smaller church, but if you can put options out there, options for when your services are, options for when your classes are, like Sunday school classes, options for your small groups, the more options you give people, the more likely they can find you. If you just have your church at one time of the week and it's 7:30 Sunday morning or whenever, that's fine, but that doesn't work for everybody. A number of churches have started offering Saturday night possibilities. Sometimes the pastor doesn't even have to preach. They just meet for prayer. But you'd be surprised, in a blended family especially, if they can't make it on Sunday or it's too much of a hassle, Saturday night they might sneak in and come to a prayer group or some kind of a class or just an all worship time. They'll come to that. I'm an ordained minister, so I think I can say this. Sometimes worship is all you need. I like content. I like the Bible. I like teaching the Bible. I'm for that. I'm a yes. I vote yes. But sometimes worship is what you really need. You're just so frayed and so worn out from the week, you come to worship and start thinking about God instead of your own little world. And you're transformed by praising God. What I do when I get depressed, not that I ever do, what I do is I start singing the doxology. I don't sing very well. You don't want to hear me sing. Trust me in this. You do not want to hear me sing the doxology. If I sang it in this workshop, they would edit it off the tape for the podcast. But when I'm really under it, I start singing. By about the third time through the doxology, I am transformed from the inside because I'm thinking about God, not me, His bigness, not my little problem that I'm so stressed out about. Get people together for worship. Offer them options. It is powerful. It is good. Help them connect network. This is more of a medium-sized to larger church idea, but in larger churches, they have started planning drop-off days at McDonald's and places like that where you're not the only parent waiting to transfer your kid or pick up your kid. Larger churches have enough of a network like that that they can do that. I don't know if you've done the blended family drill yourself, but you're going to meet and trade kids and get the kid back or send the kid over for the weekend and somebody doesn't show up. These tales are endless. And it's also not gender specific, but often it is the mom waiting while the dad who's going to be there at 6 isn't there at 6:15 or 6:30 or 7? And that's a whole issue about boundaries, which I think we talk about later in this broadcast. But help people network with other blended and step families. Maybe there's ways to share driving, share pickup, share drop-off. There may be a way to help each other there for a medium or large-sized church especially. Think about off-peak retreats. This is mostly a holiday idea. Consider when you plan your Christmas events or your holiday events, whatever you do at holidays, think about the fact that some people are going to be very time challenged and not going to be able to be together as a family. I had a pastor suggest to me one time, here was his idea, this Christmas, why don't we bring back all the ex-partners from all of our blended families and just have everybody all together in one service? And he asked me what I thought of that. So I swallowed hard, and I prayed and asked God for wisdom, and then I told him what I thought of that. Maybe not a good idea. His heart was good. He wanted this massive, I think he saw it as this massive healing time when we would all come back together. And I saw it more as like how many rounds of ammunition were people going to be buying. That was more, we saw it in different ways. Think about off-peak retreats, off-peak times to do what you do during the holidays. Teach people time management skills. You don't have to be a blended family or remarried couple. Teach people how to manage and schedule. That's a valuable, valuable skill. Have you had a time management seminar in your church in the last year? People need to know. Everybody's busy. I don't know anybody that's not busy. We're all busy. Everyone is. Multitasking. Speak to the crazy X factor. Now, we speak to the crazy X factor as pacifists, right? So we're not endorsing murder or anything like that. We're all pacifists. We're all on the same page. Don't believe in violence. Thou shalt not kill. What do I do with the crazy X if you're taking murder off the table? I teach. I train. I show people how to deal with difficult people. And this is tough. Godly humility is in Scripture. I'm supposed to be humble and godly, and I'm supposed to be a servant. But it can cross over into being a doormat, which is not healthy and not good. Yes? Yes. Yes.
I mean, it's really hard.
Yes.
And, I mean, you hear both sides, but you always choose one whether you want to or not.
Yes.
How do you not do that?
Yes.
How do you try to keep... Because, like, I mean, we've got a bunch of couples, but we still have both of them coming. But they're... one sits over here and one sits over here.
Yes.
You know, and it's... How do you do that?
It is. It's extremely challenging. Somehow you have got to be the love of Jesus to everybody involved without picking, without choosing. That's a...
And you get one saying, well, you must not love me enough if you're loving them. You know, you don't really love me if you love them too.
Absolutely. We are working with a woman right now who is literally divorced because her pastor, not a Nazarene pastor, I might add, although it could have been, but it wasn't, for the record, it was not. She went in one time, she was in a serious marriage issue, serious, went in one time to the pastor of her church, who listened for about 30 minutes and said, divorce the bum. So you're talking about not taking sides? The pastor didn't listen to the husband, didn't get the full picture, he heard about 30 minutes and said, she heard it from her pastor, what was she supposed to do? Her pastor said, divorce the bum, she went out and divorced the bum. Now she's wishing she hadn't. She really wishes she hadn't. So, good point.
We have a family that came, a newly married family where one of the spouses was from a bad divorce from a different Nazarene church in town. So we have this, and it's like, again, you know, well, we're taking their side because they're attending our church, but we understand they were a big mess up of that.
Yes.
Yeah, there is no right side.
Yeah.
There's no right side.
Here's what I like about being older. I know I look dazzlingly young to you, but here's what I like about being older. I've lived a while now. Now I understand that we have to love everybody. We really do. I mean, that I read that in a really important book.
Yeah.
Okay. We really do. But it's also okay for us to call out bad behavior and say that's not appropriate behavior. And the older I get, the more free I feel in calling out. I got to be loving when I do it, but I'm now able and equipped to call out bad behavior on either side, and usually on both sides, and to say, you know, that's not helpful. What you're doing right there, that's not helpful.
And the problem is, I mean, like, she's remarried, where she left that mess there. So I can't call out bad behavior because she's remarried. That part's done. We're trying to help this marriage.
Yes.
But that's a disaster.
Yes.
Because the children are with that group, not with this group. And so, yeah. And yeah. I'm thrilled they're all going to church. But what does that say back to, how did we get to that point?
Right. And this is not that seminar, but your points are so good. I'll just speak to that point also, because you're raising, that's a hugely important, that's a very important point. So let me speak to that. Over time, the power of a positive, healthy example has more influence than you think it does. So even if there's ill health in the ex or ill health in the other family, all you really have to do is be as godly as you can be. You yourself, what can you control besides yourself? Ultimately, nothing. Ultimately, you just have to be as godly as you can be. There's more power in that than I think most of us realize over time. It doesn't, you know, not in the first week, not in 6 weeks, over the course of time, just that powerful, godly example pays off. It's a big thing. Classes about boundaries. Cloud and Townsend have some great material about boundaries. This is something that doesn't have to be a blended family issue, but it's a huge issue for blended families with crazy exes. Learning to define boundaries and set boundaries and enforce boundaries. It's critical. It's crucial. It's valuable for everybody. If your church hasn't done Cloud and Townsend, maybe they should do a boundary seminar. Yes, the two authors are Cloud and Townsend. If you Google, I think it's Henry Cloud and Mr. Townsend's name. I don't remember at this moment. But Cloud and Townsend have some excellent work on boundaries. Yes, yes. Excellent book. First-rate book.
For those that are going through healing after.
Yes.
Like,
yes. Yeah. Right. Teach people how to speak well of others even when others mess up. This is huge. This is a skill every Christian human being ought to have. Every married person ought to have. I had a person call me out. We're in a new church assignment right now. I'm an ordained pastor, but I'm not always pastoring a church. Right now, I am pastoring a church. I had a 84-year-old lady come over and whisper to me, and I had to bend down to hear her. She said, "Every time you talk about your wife, it's always positive." I'm like, yes. First of all, because that's the truth. And secondly, yes. I do aim for that. So you don't have to be a blended family. Learn to speak positively of others. Probably over there across town, they're not speaking well of you. I get that. They're probably running you in the ground and lying about you and saying things about you. I get that. Speak well of others even when they mess up. Set a positive example over time that is so powerful. Train people to do that even in the midst of dealing with a crazy ex. You're giving them a life skill that has infinite value. For all of us growing up and moving forward by pursuing maturity and holiness, there has never been a better time to be a holiness church than right now. This is an awesome day and age to be a holiness church. What does the world we live in need if not holiness? It's got everything else. This is a wonderful time to just teach and especially live holiness. It's a great time to talk, but especially walk holiness. Learn to grow up, to be the grown-up in the family, to be the grown-up in the discussion. Walk in the direction of God. Behavioral issues, classes for kids of divorce, teens of divorce, both of those are booming areas. If you can't do it in your church, maybe your district NYI could do that, your district SDMI could do that. Get people together with a counselor or several counselors. Talk about what it's like to go through divorce as a group of kids, as a group of teens. It's powerful. Larger churches are doing that. They cannot believe the turnout. That larger churches are stunned at how many teens of divorce are out there that will show up to talk about what they're facing. Teach kids, especially teens, how to adjust to a new step-parent in the home. Train them to do that. How you can like a new person without being disloyal to the old one. That's a huge issue. I feel like I'm being disloyal to mom if I like stepmom. Show them how to work through those adjustments. If your church is doing that, your Sunday school is doing that, your NYI is doing that, your SDMI is doing that, that's got value. That's got huge value. youth leaders, Sunday school teachers, everybody kind of on the same page, knowing what the clues are, knowing what the patterns are, giving people these great skills. Get kids to camp onto Christian college campuses like Northwest Nazarene University. Does this one have a PK retreat for the PKs on the region? Okay. Those are wonderful things. When you can do it to have a retreat for MKs or TCKs or for PKs, wonderful, wonderful things. Also great for blended families and children of divorce. Great things. Get people to camp. Get them onto a college campus. Get them exposed to a life that is different than the life they're going through. That's what helps to go away to camp or to go away to school. It's different than what you face at home. It shows you a future you could have. It's powerful. It's positive. Money management. We're near the end of the seminar. We're close to lunch, so let me just run through these last few slides. Dave Ramsey has done some great stuff with Financial Peace University, learning how to manage scarce financial resources. Most of us don't need to learn how to manage Donald Trump's wealth because we don't face that problem. That's not our issue. We have a little less to work with. So Dave Ramsey has some good stuff. Money Life is a radio show with Chuck Bentley. That's on the radio, like Focus on the Family or other programs. They also have good material in print that they can give you. Have sermons and Sunday school lessons about the power of tithing and giving. People who tithe can explain the benefits of tithing better than any sermon ever could. So when it's time in your church, just let a tithe payer get up and talk about it. Say, this is what the before picture, the after picture. That's all you really have to do. You don't need to yell at people. Just show them before and after. And stewardship helps all families, not just blended families. Learning stewardship helps us all. And also, since financial resources are scarce, have ministry budgets that give away things, events, training. We have a book for single parents that we just give away through larger churches. We have to pay for the book. We have to buy it from the publisher, which is Harvest House. We buy it from the publisher and give it away. When you can possibly do that, give away a book, a CD, a DVD, help people going through problems. That book right there, right from the start, has been used by blended families. I won't go into the whole story, but that's an NPH project that started. Okay, I'll give you the brief story. While we've had free marriage training, it's been very linear and concrete sequential and fill in the blank and take a survey and send it off and get a score. While we've had that, marriages have been hitting the rocks faster than ever. NPH said, let's try something else. So the result was right from the start, which is interactive and discussion-based about what your expectations are for marriage, about what your experiences have been with family life. It's a completely different thing than fill in the blank and take the survey, and that's brand new from NPH. The world has changed rapidly. A lot of step families and blended families out there. Thank you for caring about that.